Welcome to this episode of the Down the Pool Podcast. On this episode, it's just me and Chris this week. Chris was off last week, so we're glad to have him back. Gary cried off. I think he's got piles or something like that. He's got hemorrhoids, so he's at home sitting on a cushion right now. So, Chris, hope you're feeling better, man. And yeah, like it just feels like we just need some good news soon with the Wanderers right now. So, how are you feeling, buddy?
Yeah, definitely a little bit better than I'm assuming the mood is. Although, from what I've heard, the boys are still in great spirits. The boys are still positive. We'll be talking about this in the coming minutes, an hour, if you will. It's still early, so I
Yeah.
haven't quite hit that panic button yet. I'm feeling a lot better though. It was pretty nasty, and it's not hemorrhoids. It was never hemorrhoids, folks.
Okay. Is that's just Gary. Thoughts and prayers for Gary's piles. So let's get into this. So the game plan that we did have for this game kind of went out the window after the red card, which we'll get into in a second. So I kind of just wanted to get, because it was kind of interesting to see how we were going to set up a home, the player selection. So I just kind of want to get your thoughts on, first of all, like the player selection, how you thought that went, and where did you see everybody kind of slotting in? What was their tactics for the start of the game?
It was a little bit funny before the game. You catch up and you see the folks you haven't seen. I'm terrible at math, but where are we talking? 6 months since the last game on November, December, January, February, March, April. Yeah, about 6 months since the last game. So, we being who we are, we're watching the games. We've got Fubo, we've got One Soccer. So we've actually watched the first couple of games and we've got a vibe and an idea of what Patrice's concepts and his tactics are. But not a lot of the match goers were able to watch the first couple of matches. So they're asking me questions and I'm talking about what I saw, whether it was the three in the back system or whether it was Nimic or Kale getting forward, et cetera, et cetera. And then the lineup dropped. And a lot of the apps, such as like FootMob and SofaScore and even Yahoo, they were so used to our tactics from those first two matches that the tactical board that was listed on the websites all looked like the 3-5-2 or 3-4-3, whatever you wanted to call it. But the personnel didn't quite match. So I'm there with Mark Harper, president of Storm Soccer Club, who's actually leaving the country soon. I got to give him a quick shout out. He listens to the show and a wonderful, wonderful guy. And I'm there kind of moving and playing a little bit of chess with him, trying to figure out who's going where. By the end of it, came to realize what we ended up displaying was the old school back in time 4-2-3-1 almost. I liked it because it showed that even though Patrice has been really putting his foot into this new tactic, into this new system, that he still has trust in that 4-2-3-1. I've also talked a lot. I mean, a lot of your listeners, I know, maybe don't follow me on social media, but one of the things I really loved about Patrice's tactics last year, which is kind of dissimilar to what a lot of other people liked, is how it was similar in its base to what Steven Hart had, but it gave and showed and brought Patrice's little whimsy and his little intricacies to the tactic. So we got to see a style and a brand of football that Steven had tried, but Patrice was able to unlock. So as we saw the first couple of weeks of the season this year, not necessarily unravel, because as I said off the air, it's early. I want to see that 3-4-3, 3-5-2 tactic again. I want to see the boys succeed with it because it seems like something they've been working on really hard in preseason. But the 4-2-3-1 last year was such a tried and trusted tactic that it was actually kind of refreshing and exciting to see that Patrice wasn't worried about an Ottawa that he was going to play with five in the back, almost, if you want to even get that particular. It wasn't a hard three-man midfield trying to put a holding player. It seemed like Patrice was going for it, and it seemed like Patrice was matching up individually with the players, which, Derek said at Pints with Patrice, and I agree with him. Yes, as a totality and as a squad on paper, Ottawa is fantastic. But if you really match things up player by player, personality by personality, role by role, we're not far behind. So I kind of saw that, and I kind of saw that that was what Patrice was trying to do. And I mean, up until the calamity that was, I kind of liked what I was seeing. I kind of liked the positivity. Ottawa were comfortable on the ball early in the match, but as is with the Wanderers, once we finally get into the flow of the match, we always seem to be the first team to make that adjustment that is effective. And we were starting to see that bear some fruit before, yeah, that happened.
It did kind of feel like it was and I kind of liked the fact that we were kind of playing our style at home. You know what I mean? Like we weren't adapting to what Ottawa were doing. We kind of like really were like setting our stall out, and this was kind of, and it just felt kind of nice and familiar. Obviously Julian Dunn coming in for Cale Lockery, which we kind of mentioned before the season that we might see those two interchange a lot more than having Dan Nimick out of the team. And I thought it was having Wesley back in that kind of familiar left centre back slash left winger thing really was really good to see as well. But obviously we can't, you know, I thought we were kind of not in the front foot, but I thought we were playing some all right football. We got a corner. We were doing all right. And then obviously the red card. We can't not talk about the game, not talk about this. It
Yeah.
was a pivotal moment of the game. So, you know, I've seen quite a few different interpretations of what happened. Like it seems to me on One Soccer, from the analysts in the studio to the commentary team, that everybody was adamant that was a red card because his foot was high, his studs were shown, and he got him in the chest. And there wasn't really a definitive angle to see it properly, and the person who had the best angle of anybody was obviously the referee. But when you look at it kind of like from one angle from the back, it looks like he kind of Lorenzo flicked it with his foot, so he looked like
Yeah.
he got the ball. And I also thought that obviously Manny Aparicio kind of overplayed his little seven roles that he did. But you know, it is kind of one of those that you're gonna, like, you know, Ottawa fans are gonna say it's a red. Wanderers fans are
Course.
going to say it wasn't. What was your thoughts on that? What was your view?
Well, from the match going perspective, and I don't, you might have actually had a better view of things than I from where you're at, because you're right on the field level. I know it's good, solid 50 yards away or so, but you probably had as good as a view as I did, because from our perspective in the seats, there were a couple bodies in between where we were sitting and where it actually happened, but you could see Lorenzo's foot go up. So of course the first reaction is, ah, shut, that's a yellow. Because you don't really think of Lorenzo. He's a bit of a wild horse. We've seen that last year. He had a run of yellow cards, but and did a tremendous job avoiding suspension, sitting on the yellow card limit. But he's not necessarily a dirty player. He's not Paul Scholes. You know, he's got a little more of a little more respect to his game. He's got a little more balance with his game. He's actually not a bad backtracker, which is why I'm not too worried if he ends up being more in the anchor role this year, a la Mo Omar last year. But of course, because we have Fubo and we've got the new big screen at the Wanderers grounds, replay, replay, replay. We got to see it. Big screen didn't really show much. We know that that's like looking at ants in an anthill. But the replay on Fubo, they had one where, as much as I initially, especially, was like, that's a yellow, it's a yellow, it's harsh. It was more so, I think my bias was coming out a little bit more. I had those blue tinted specs on. It's early in the season, first 17 minutes of a home opener. It's a gorgeous day. Couldn't have been any better. The grass looked beautiful. The boys were playing well. I was starting to play well. You know, you did it was it, what it was is I think our initial reaction as a fan base, both online and in person, was no way. This can't really be happening. Because as time went, like you said, halftime, the analysts were all talking. They showed a couple more replays there. God bless Jess. She was in the Facebook chat. She was more or less saying it was a red. Even looking back now, I can see interpretations where it wasn't a red. And that's not me, the Wanderers fan, speaking. That's me, the footballer, speaking. You were talking about how it almost kind of seemed like he flicked the foot to get to the ball, which implies that he got there first. It also kind of implies that he was trying to pull out of the attack. There was just a situation this weekend, actually, and I wish I was able to figure out how to do screen grab and all this stuff, but it was a situation in the USL week this weekend where the same type of thing happened. The guy was almost like ninja kicking to get the ball. And when he realized that the defender was coming in essentially like heads and shoulders first to play the ball, he pulled out. Now the contact happened, 100% a yellow card, and that's what was given. But the intention to pull back, his knee still made contact. Of course, the other team's screaming and yelling for a red card. But the reality is intention is also part of the interpretation. And I don't know if the intention was there by Lorenzo to be malicious. You said it, Manny Aparicio. We love him to death. He made a bit of a meal of it. But I do believe that the right call was made. And it sucks to say that. And it sucks for Lorenzo because he's a tremendous guy, tremendous player. Like I said, I don't think he's a dirty guy or a dirty player. He's somehow got that reputation, but I think it's because people look at the box scores and see how many cards he's got, and they don't actually watch how he plays. And I'm worried and concerned, and I hope he's listening. I don't want him to lose that bite in his game because of this situation. That was something that we were talking about in the stands after it happened. We weren't really so much worried about losing Lorenzo for the next two games potentially as much as we were worried about potentially losing who Lorenzo is as a player long term, because as we've seen with this league over the years, and I'm not going to go on a rant about how terrible the officiating has been at times, but we have seen players change the way they play and their play style and the way they love the game because of how the officiating has presented itself in this league over the years. Somebody with his flowedness and his creativity, you don't want to see him lose that. So to summarize, initial reaction, obviously, no way. Once cooler heads prevailed, you take a look at a few of the replays, you think the referee really didn't have much of a choice.
Yeah, it was an odd one. Like I said, like looking at a couple of angles, it looked like that he got to us, like he flicked it with his foot, and then it kind of, and it's unfortunate with the way the game is, it's very difficult to kind of get away with that. And I think you know, did the Wanderers really want to go down the route of trying to appeal it when you know it's such a loose, an ambiguous interpretation of a rule. So,
yeah, actually, so, and real quick, I ended up getting a message from a listener on Twitter. I shared it with the Facebook group, more or less of like a potential explanation of the red. So this person said to me, I've heard that as a push to reduce concussions, referees have been encouraged to give reds for any studs up challenge potentially or towards or above the sternum. Unfortunately, even if Lorenzo had no intention, this would qualify. And then, of course, he just goes on to say it's a shame because he doesn't seem like the type of player, not much in it, etc. But this could be something, and this does happen from year to year, where the officials, their preseason meetings, their preseason applications, they do the friendly matches, they do all this stuff. This could be something that they, the Canadian Soccer Association, Canadian Referees Association, or the union, or whatever they're called, this might be something that they've discussed. This could be something that is more centric to Canada than it is the laws of the game, which is why it might have slipped under the umbrella with some of the deeper rule sleuths like myself. But I wish I could find, it's an aside who sent it to me. Whoever it is will probably find me, because
you're probably right that we're probably told that, you know, fussed above whatever. But yeah, it was unfortunate. Obviously, yeah. Like with the first game of the season, your adrenaline's all over the place too. So I guess the big question, like aside from this, is like, you know, I think Josh put online that it was 2-game ban he's going to get. What does that mean? What does that mean for the Wanderers? Like for their next, like obviously tomorrow on Thursday, he can play because the Canadian Championship. But
yes.
What does that mean for our next 2 games? Like, who do you see replacing him?
Well, we got the glimpse of Jeremy and Rampy in that kind of pivot, double pivot, once Lorenzo was playing as the 10 against Vancouver. And I think that that's the logical fill in, really. The next match after the Canadian Championship, I believe, is Forge. So having those two guys in those pockets anyways, where they're probably both going to play fairly deep. I think that in a weird way, timing wise, that first match against Forge, I think that suspension is not the worst time to have Lorenzo sit out. I also think, and I don't know if we're going to talk about this on this episode or on the follow up to talk about how things went, but we're playing a really tough team in the Canadian Championship. And I don't think Lorenzo typically would have been featured in this match Thursday, tomorrow for the listeners. So I think that because of the fact that he only played, 17 minutes to the red card? So it would almost make sense for Patrice to give him that full 90. And I think having his protection in the midfield, both on the ball and off the ball, is going to be really important against a team that plays really downhill and has a lot of fun trying to find spaces on the wings. So having him in the middle just to shore things up, I think, will be important. Beyond that, though, like I said, I think we'll be fine against Forge. And it's eluding me. Who do we play after Forge?
Calgary.
Ah, okay. That one might be a little bit tougher. I can see Charlie Trafford having a little bit of fun in that match. But I've got faith in Rampy, obviously, and I've got faith in Jeremy. And part of falling down to 10 men, we got to see a little bit of Probo next to Rampy. And I wasn't disillusioned at all, actually. I thought the two of them did quite well for the first 15, 20 minutes together. Things sort of broke down. And then the second half, Probo was allowed to have a little bit more freedom into the attacking third. But I'm not too worried or concerned. I think the plan is in front of us, and Jeremy and Rampy makes the most sense.
Yeah, I think so too. I thought Jeremy actually played very well when he came on. He probably played some of our best attacking players, so I don't think that's going to harm us too much having him coming in. But you're right, though. I think against Calvary, that will definitely might come and haunt us. But you know, you're right about Thursday. I think that we need a win, like, just to kind of boost our spirits. Plus, also, how big of a game the next round is for the club in terms of like financial windfalls and all that kind of stuff, like, to play Toronto. So I think we definitely need a win in that game, and I don't think anybody should take it for granted, because we've all seen how good the semi-pro teams are, so I don't think we should take it for granted. So, you know, obviously then when Lorenzo went off, how did we pivot? Like, how do we change the way we were playing to try and go against a very forceful Ottawa team? Because, you know, we've talked about how stacked it is, their midfield especially. How do we change tactics? And I guess the big question would be, like, did it work?
Well, that's the hard one too. Again, early in the season, to have to utilize your 10-man package, it's not ideal. As a manager, you want to have time to work on these systems in training. You want to have time to work on these systems potentially later in matches when you might have a late injury after you've run into substitutions, when you're up 3-0 or something like that. You know, less stressful, less painful situations where that 10-man package can actually go to work. That being said, what appeared to be like a 4-4-1 almost worked to wonders. I think it was just a quick lapse of judgment and a quick lapse of motion between the midfielder and the defenders, which allowed their first goal. Their second goal was well earned. And I think their third goal was just a matter of legs were running low. Subs were coming a little bit late. In fact, the subs came on the other end of that whistle for the third goal. So when you look at the surface of what happened after the red card, I think there's a lot to take out of it positively. There was a lot of attacking motion. Aiden Daniels kind of had a free roll. Wherever he would end up, you would see other players in the system kind of interchanging. There were a lot of 1-2s on the wings. I really, really loved how when Riley Ferrazzo came on, it completely changed the dynamic of what those wingers were supposed to do. Obviously, you're chasing a 3-0 scoreline at that point, so you can have a little bit more fun. But I think if we do end up in a position like that down the road, Patrice might feel more comfortable implementing that kind of attacking introversion earlier in the match when things are a little more attainable. I do feel like the lads should feel a little bit hard done, because I do think that despite the fact that they were up a man, Ottawa didn't quite show a level that I figured that they were going to show. I know that there was a fear in house and online that this could get really, really ugly. And after they scored the first goal, you could kind of see the heads get down. I got to shout out Zach Fernandez. It was like he saw the moment, got those boys riled up and into a huddle. Once the huddle broke, he was trying to get the fans motivated. I've always said that Rampy, he's an incredible captain, but Rampy is a club captain. He's not necessarily the leader on the field outside of by example. Rampy's very vocal, but Rampy is like that wise sage that you go to for advice when you need it, or when he speaks, you listen. But he's not the kind of guy that's going to do what Zach did. And you know, as many negatives as there were that came from that red card, there were also a bundle of positives, and that was one of them. Was there was a reaction, you know, even down 3-0, the guys who came on as subs, it seemed like they had a point to prove and a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. Getting that goal, I think, means a little bit more than we know. Thursday is a big match. You know, we can't take Saint Laurent lightly at all, but I think beyond Thursday, to have at least that ice broken, that first goal finally internally, that has to feel really good for the squad. A man down against the run of play at times to get that goal was fantastic. I during the broadcast, they said that we lead the league in uprights hitting, and I think we hit two, if I'm not mistaken, on Saturday. One up a man, one down a man. So, you know, it's really easy to get disheartened, and it's really easy to continue to pound the negatives. But I'm just trying, and it's not hard to see the positives and see where the ideas are implementing and see where the guys are really confident in their game. It's going to click. In Patrice, we trust. But I do also understand, given the club's history, that there's some pessimism, and that I respect that.
Yeah, I felt like, you know, it's kind of a similar feel for me anyway, like for, as last year. Like last year, we had those 7 or 8 games, the draws, and we all kind of felt, a lot of people felt that, you know, here we go again. And then other people were like, you can see there's a difference and it's kind of work. And I feel like last year, where we got kind of like a little bit of a green on, a couple of occasions, and we got draws, we're getting losses now. Like the red card obviously didn't help, but as you said, like I thought that when we did change things up after the short goal, and obviously Ottawa were probably like just coasting, but I think that the people that came on and the goal itself was an amazing goal, actually.
It really was.
Yeah, like the ball from Jeremy and the goal, the way that Riley took it down and scored was fantastic. But it just felt like with this game, like just watching it, like the goals that we conceded, when you're watching them back, like there's so many like just people switching off. It wasn't like, yeah, like, you know, the second goal looked fantastic when you see like Manny Aparicio, the way he finished it, the ball from Chris Twardek. But you just watch, like, you know, we were very slow to close Twardek down. We kind of like just allowed him to cross the ball, and Manny Aparicio was on the edge of the box and just kind of just sauntered in there, and nobody tracked him. And it was kind of one of those like, oh, he'll mark him, and then everybody just let him go. And, you know, even like the third goal, like, you know, as you said, it was kind of toward legs, and we were kind of like a little bit late. Felt late anyway with the substitutions, and I kind of didn't want to just touch on that just a little bit, because, you know, there has been mutterings, I guess, online, and the reason why, like, we have to talk about this stuff, because I feel like, you know, sometimes like people think they were like just being uber negative, but, like, you know, just people have opinions, and we kind of need to talk about it. But, you know, a few people say that we've been very late in bringing substitutions on. Like, I mean, like, I think the majority of these were like 74th minute, when you've got like Jeremy came on a little bit earlier. But like, do you think that we're kind of waiting too long for substitutions, or is it just a kind of a case of hoping that things are clicking and then reacting? You know what I mean? Like, it's because it's kind of like, you know, when you're like when you're playing blackjack, whether it's a stick or twist, or you don't like twist, you know what I mean? So it's kind of one of those things. So, like, do you think that we are kind of like being a little bit late with our substitutions?
If I have one criticism, yes. The first match against Pacific, I feel like the reason why we didn't get a point in that match was literally because those substitutions came too late. We saw how the flow of the match was changing before the subs happened, and then after the subs happened, we were the better team literally to the final whistle. And I feel like if those subs came about 10, 15 minutes sooner, and I'm getting hindsight is hindsight, and I totally acknowledge that. But in live time, I'm thinking to myself, where's this substitution? 60th minute, 65th set. Why are we waiting so long to make substitutions? I understood against Pacific because it's the first match of the year. Patrice liked what he was seeing. I liked what we were seeing. I think for the very most part, we enjoyed what we were seeing. It was just a matter of that finishing product. And yeah, after the 75th minute, after the substitutions were made, we were able to break through their low block a little bit more, but it was still a lot of crosses. It was still a lot of 30, 40 yard balls to try to make something happen, where I feel like if those guys had another 10, 15 minutes to get into the match, to get their legs warmed up, stretched out, and not have to run into these walls, that I think they would have been able to be more effective. And I think that we saw that in essence against Ottawa this weekend. I think Vancouver was a weird match. It was a different type of match. I just think last game of the road trip, I almost gave that match away in a weird way. I would never, ever give points away mentally. But I just remember like being up late watching that game, just thinking, ugh, I don't know about this one. And that's the way it went, really, right? I do think that, again, when it's this early in the year and you're implementing your 10-man package, and as long as Patrice had to implement it, 75 minutes of the match essentially with 10 men, it's still kind of a matter of trial and error. And I think that where we were down 2-0 at that point, the substitutions, in my opinion, should have came a little bit sooner, because at that point, you've got nothing to lose. You're then giving this second unit more time to do what you didn't give them the opportunity to do in the first match. Down 10 to 10 men, it's even more important because those fresh legs are going to show even more. I think, though, to an extent, and again, I'm not trying to, we're not trying to be bluntly negative. We have opinions. We're also not trying to be blindly positive. But from my coaching background, and I've been in a situation similar to Patrice, my very first high school game I coached, we were down to 10 men after 10 minutes, a professional foul, but that was what it was. We were able to nick a draw in that match, and it's one of my proudest moments and games as a manager. But I remember how difficult it was managing that match, because you were on the sideline 10 times more than you wanted to be, yelling out instructions and making sure the right pieces and the right players were in the right places. So I don't want to be too critical. However, that's two of three matches so far this year where I personally think Patrice should have utilized the bench a little bit sooner. I know you mentioned Jeremy came before the package deal after the third goal. Him, the difference that he made should have been an example to Patrice to maybe throw two more out and then maybe throw the last two out when you can. At that point, maybe it still would have been 2-0. It could have been 3-0 still at that point, but I think it would have been more important and more valuable to get those minutes. Plus, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse, but the under 21 minute situation last year was a little bit of a heart skipper. I would have liked to seen more minutes out of Camilo, who kind of showed himself in those last few minutes of the match. But in Patrice, we trust, brother. I've said it. I always will. Love Pat to death. I think he's a tremendous mind. He's a smart mind. And I can see why he has kind of held off on making the substitutions. I just kind of wish he did.
Yeah, so that's fair enough. Before we get into it, we've got a couple of listener questions, but I do want to say that it was actually quite. This sounds weird, and we kind of give Ottawa an awful lot of stick because they're kind of our main rivals now because they're the closest team to us. I actually enjoyed watching this team they've assembled. Like I thought, like
Yes.
watching like Ollie Bassett just roam around and just watching. It's great watching really good footballers, and we have great footballers too. But just watching them find these little pockets of space, watching Manny Aparicio as well, and like Tabla, I thought was really good. Twardek played really well too, so it was kind of nice. Despite the fact we got beaten, it was good to see what everybody's been hyping these guys up to be, and they've got some really good footballers. And I think it's a credit to the lads that we didn't get rolled over like by 6-7 goals. So I think we have to take some positivities out of it. I think that the fact that we held them to three, we caused them some issues. We, like as you
Yes.
mentioned, we had to post the crossbar and stuff for that. So it's I think this is one of those, like, I think the worst team we could have played after those first two games at home would have been Ottawa, and obviously like the sending off didn't help. I did want to just to kind of talk a little bit before we do just move on here about first of all, just the first game of the season. So how did you find any differences at the ground when you were there? And obviously then we'll mention Pricegate. That's what the newspapers are called now, Pricegate.
You're gonna get me in trouble, bro.
I
You're gonna
know.
get me in
No,
trouble.
I
No,
know.
no,
We'll touch on it in a second, but just the actual, like, just
Yep.
away from the price issue. How did you find the experience being back? Because I know that, like, you're a social butterfly, so you probably saw a ton of people. But like, did you find? Because I remember, like, last year, I think there was like a lack. It felt like there wasn't enough porta potties. Like, how did you find the facility this time around and stuff like that?
Big improvement this year. Big improvement. And I had my son for this year's home opener, so it's a different match day experience with him. You're literally watching for two, And there was a point where he needed to use the bathroom. So, off to the bathroom we went. And that was the first thing I noticed, to be honest with you, brother, is when I came down the steps, porta potty, porta potty, porta potty, there were a ton. It seemed like they were avoiding one of the biggest issues and biggest complaints from the first couple of games last year, was that there just wasn't quite enough. The wait for the bathroom didn't take the whole halftime, which is, I think, the first time I've ever experienced that. You always have to leave during injury time, or like literally right when the whistle blows, to be able to get in and out. And you're not even able to get in line for a beer or anything to eat or anything because you're waiting for the pisser. We were able to almost jump into the lineup to get the cotton candy, and then we heard the second half whistle. So I told them we'll wait till after. But that was a big plus, huge plus. And I think that that is something where you're going to keep and draw and maintain a casual fan base. I have spoken to people over the years who say the lack of accessible bathroom facilities make my experience hard. And people have health issues, and that's a big deal. So to see the club initially, and I think proactively as well, avoid any of those complaints and avoid any of those issues and have as many as they possibly could all around the concourse, it was fantastic. The other difference was what you were talking about. I'm not drinking much this year. I've actually openly stated that. And shout out to Andrew. He snitched right on me. I did try a couple of those margarita or mojito or whatever, the blueberry mojito. Yeah. And 6.5, 7 out of 10. Not the worst, not the best. But the price threw me off. I was confused. And I didn't actually take the second to look at the prices of the original stuff, the stuff from years past that I had normally bought. I figured a new premium style, I'll pay this much for this to try it, especially if it's 2 for 1. But then one by one, bit by bit, people were coming up to the seats and they were like, "Holy shit, did you guys see the price of this? Did you guys see the price of that?" Go online, and it's literally more people are complaining about the price of the beer than they are the game, which is probably a first too. And I was confused. So review to the people what exactly happened, Anthony. Like, what the club came good with things, but is there any kind of like information?
No, I don't normally get involved with like club stuff, and I don't like I obviously with what we do, like I don't like to like cause any issues and what all that kind of stuff. But I came in, and like obviously you expect to pay a premium when you go to a sports event. I get that. Like if you go to the Mooseheads, you go to the Thunderbirds, it's the same kind of thing. But so I came in and I saw the price and I was like, geez, $14 plus tax, plus the tip then on top of it, right? I was like, Jesus Christ, that's a lot. And I was kind of just talking to my friends about it, and then I just tweeted like myself, just like I guess just old man shouting at a cloud kind of thing. I was just like, Jesus Christ, it was like holy bollocks, like $14 plus tax for beer. And then a couple of people kind of chimed in and said they felt they had the same experience, that they kind of thought was a little bit excessive. And then in fairness to the club, and I think that's like, one of the great things, just going back to like the facilities and stuff like that, I think they're really, and I've said this before, like after last year when people were complaining on the first match day about the lack of like porta potties, the queues for toilets, blah blah blah, they fix it, and I think they're really good at that. They kind of sense which way the wind is blowing, like with certain things, and I take them at face value on and off that stuff. And the next day then they posted saying there was a mistake with the prices, there's a price correction, we who knows like why those price boards existed and why all the terminals had all those prices. We can kind of whatever, but in fairness to them, they came out and they said the price is going to be fixed, it's going to be like obviously whatever. And then to make up for it, the happy hour goes into half time. And I think that's, there's not much more they can do. Like, I know a lot of people who had come from the Valley and they're not going to come up on a first Thursday game, and I get it, and I get the frustration. And what I would do in that scenario is maybe just reach out to them and just say like, hey, this is the experience I had, because I think they're pretty good at accommodating people. But I think to try and move past it, like what they did, what they what they're what they're doing is awesome. So I think I'm not gonna be at the game on Thursday. I'm gonna watch it from home because I work. So like I'm gonna miss out on it, but it's like whatever. It's like I think that overall, I think the club are really good at like fixing any kind of like the mistakes that are made. So I think I'm cool with drawing a line under it and moving on. And I think it was. You kind of got to respect them when they kind of just put their hands up and say, hey, there was a pricing error or whatever like that. So, I was kind of more shocked just at the price of
Me too.
like soft drinks and water and stuff like that. So, fair play to them. Let's put that out of the way. Great job, everybody. Just a couple of, before we finish off here, Chris, just a couple of, listener questions. This first one is from CB Keeper Guy. So I'm glad that you're answering this one. Can we talk about the fact that Ottawa were up a man at the 90th minute, yet could not dominate the ball and overall play, in spite of the Wanderers deciding not to park the bus? Are we ready to say that Ottawa are simply frauds?
Oh yeah, if Gary answered this question, we would have CPL World War
know.
One.
I know.
Oh
I think,
man.
I think I think Ottawa did a very professional job in how to do the game. And I as I mentioned earlier on, I think they did really well in a good account of ourselves considering the team we were up against and the goal we scored was pretty decent. So I don't think they're frauds. I think
Oh, 100%
I
not. And
think
plus,
yeah.
look, as
I love
much
the
as,
banter though.
oh yeah, 100%. CB's the man. I love that guy. He goes right at the Ottawa fans too, man. Jeez. That's in this in a similar fashion, and this might sound silly, but in a similar fashion as to how Patrice is implementing his 10-man unit, Ottawa playing a man up for that long, you kind of get complacent to an extent, and we saw that late in the match. That's kind of why the goal came. I mean, not that we didn't deserve the goal. Like you said, Jeremy saw a tremendous opportunity to hit that ball. Riley took it down like a world-class striker. Beautiful goal. But Ottawa at that point had also brought in Walker and Antonoro and I think their other under 21 as well. So Roy. So these guys were all cutting their teeth on the season. I think two of the three of them were making their season debuts. So I think you put it perfectly, a professional performance. You know, you go up a man, you have to adjust your tactics as well. Carlos Gonzalez, as being a more defensive-minded manager, he also, and I mean, this is kind of hypocritical considering how many late goals they gave up last year. But as a defensive manager, you man manage a lot more intricately when it comes to how many minutes players are playing and how much they're exerting themselves. So I think that for Ottawa, it was also probably a little bit of a culture shock because they were expected to match up man to man. Now all of a sudden they're playing against a zone. So, you know, little things like that, I think really keep the mind moving when you're a manager. And I have to give Ottawa credit because very easily they could have got complacent. And at times they did, hence why we had a couple of opportunities off the woodwork. So I would never ever in a million years say that Ottawa are frauds, but I think you said it during the last little bit here. Credit to the boys for putting in the performance they put in when you want to look at it from that perspective of how good a team Ottawa is on paper and as we know, skill-wise.
We got one from Derek, but we've already answered it, I felt. So it's just what do we think of the formation tactics? Felt like they were somewhat closer to how we played last season, and rather than how we set up for the first two games of the season. And yeah, I think we answered it. Thanks for the question, Derek. This one is from Andrew Beeman, and I saw this on the Facebook discussion thing, and it's one of those ones where you're just like. I'm just gonna. I kind of want to stay out of it, but now you've given it to us. We're gonna have to answer it. So, I'd love to get your opinions on asking for player shirts. I hope I overheard a lot of it this weekend. I know where I stand, but very mixed reactions. But I've had very mixed reactions. Just curious where you stand on it. So, what when in the Facebook group, he had mentioned that a lot of kids were. Asking for shirts and stuff like that, and people in and I know that in the group or in the comments, people were saying that the players have to pay for these replacement jerseys and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. You might know more about the inside outs of how player kits work. I really don't know. So I'll let you tell us what it is, and I'll give my opinion on it. So, how about that?
I don't know the actual kit dispensation. I'm not 100% sure of that. That said, I do know it's limited, and I do know that the players do have to pay out of pocket for replacement kits. I don't know how many they start the year with, and I don't know if there's a penalty if they actually give away like a match worn kit. I shouldn't. I guess my opinion of things are skewed in a weird way because I can't tell you how many kits mom has got over the years without asking. Guys just come up to her and hear, "Missy, love you." Peter, Daniil, Chris Snow, like these guys just gave mom their jersey. So, like, a Zoom, there's others. There's other, I can't even think of them all off the top of my head right now. So, from my perspective personally, that is in a way one of like those life-changing things. If you're a kid and your favorite player is, you know, a wanderer or even a guy on the other team, and at the end of the game, it's like almost a you see it so much on television, you see it so much on
Yeah.
social media. It's almost an instinct. It's almost like a reaction immediately. Like, it's a one in a million chance, but hey, can I have your kit? I get it because that is like a piece of that player's career. If you appreciate the player taking the shirt off of their back to give to you, it's a story you could tell for the rest of your life. Like, I've got Danielle Henry hanging on my wall and he'll be there forever. Yeah, his stay with us wasn't the most robust. It didn't quite bear the fruit we thought, but his importance, his arrival, it signified something different for the club. And I'll always see that signing as like that first moment where we put ourselves on the international stage, where they were talking about us in Korea, MLS.com. Like, the Wanderers got into the footballing mainstream a little bit deeper that day. So the stories that come behind these tales, these interactions, getting Jeremy's kit before he left the first time meant the world to me. I never asked for it. He just offered it to me. And of course I said, yes, why not? You've been my favorite player that's ever played for the Wanderers. So to have your kit with your name that you would wear signed would mean the world to me, but I never asked. And I can see where he's coming from, that because it's so normalized, it takes away from that story, that feeling when you've got dozens of kids asking the same player for their jersey, and it puts so much pressure on that player who's got the jersey in his hand off of his body because he just ran 90 minutes and needs to cool off, but everybody thinks he's going to give it away. I know this is a long-winded answer, but to me, it's the type of thing where if it's a kid asking, you got to let it go. But once you get to a certain age, you have to realize that these guys aren't the millionaires that you see on TV or social media. These guys are making good money, but they're not making great money. And if they're giving away their kits at every match, that money quickly goes away because, as we know, these jerseys aren't necessarily cheap. They're not the
Yep.
most expensive jerseys in the world, but they're not cheap. So I think my PSA, and I think this could be something that as a Wanderers collective, we can maybe look at going forward, is rather than arguing or debating the concept of asking a player for their kit, educate the younger fans or educate fans who ask exactly what you were just talking about. You know, these guys got to pay for these things. And if that fan doesn't quite understand that these guys are living paycheck to paycheck, then that fan doesn't deserve the kit. So I think it's a good educational opportunity just to let the fans know and understand that, you know, sometimes a player has to say no because he needs that kit for the rest of the month.
Yeah, I think it's it was something that became prevalent in the last 4 or 5 years, with the kids with the cardboard sign saying, "Hey, can I have your shirt?" And ever since then, it's kind of got, and it's always been a thing where a player, like, to get a pair of shirts is always a big thing. But I think the big difference as well is that for the Wanderers are so accessible that, like, they do so many autograph signings, and you know, you can, like, if you see them around town and ask for an autograph, they're going to give it to you. You wait after a game, they'll sign whatever you want them to sign. So it's not like, you know, with a Premier League player, you probably only ever going to see him on game day. You probably never see him outside of that. So I can kind of get that a little bit more, whereas air players are way more accessible. So, you know, if you want to get like your own jersey signed, if you want to get anything signed at all, the players are always open to it and they're always accessible. So I think that probably isn't explained enough, where like you just want to kind of a piece of somebody, but it's very accessible to get a piece of them, if you know what I mean, because you they do an awful lot of stuff around the community. So I think it's, as you mentioned, I think that's a really good point, that it's just about education, that it sucks to not to have to, for the players, after you just ran your bollocks off for 90 minutes, to have to say to a kid, I can't give you my kit, because it is what it is. You have to, somebody has to replace it, and we're not in a situation where we have 400 jerseys. So Macron aren't going to give us each player 40 jerseys for the year so they can give them out, you know what I mean? So
Well, I mean, a good example, like a buddy of mine, he played at Thomas Groves. He played at a pretty high level. He was in Panathinaikos' youth system. And when he was playing U18 for Panathinaikos, you get a new kit every game, freshly printed, all this stuff. You could do what you wanted with your kit. And there was c'est la vie. There was no anything with the kit. As his career went on, obviously, he didn't end up going too far with things. I think he was playing like the seventh or eighth tier in England. Your paycheck was your kit. Like, you had to put down a damage deposit for your kit. You got your jersey, your shorts, and two pairs of socks for home and away. And you had to have that the whole season. If you didn't, you were losing a week's pay because you had to buy a new kit. So there were guys who he played with who had been lucky enough to have long careers, play League One, play League Two, Championship, maybe even a Premier League player or two. These guys were giving their jerseys away left and right because obviously those players had the reputations. But like my mate Thomas, he was living paycheck to paycheck. And he used to say exactly what you just said. There's nothing harder than 90 minutes. You score the goal. So every kid in that stadium wants your kit. And you can't do it because you're then not eating next week, or you're going to have to buy a bus pass. Like the little things like that. And I mean, the Wanderers don't struggle to that extent. But again, those kits add up, 70, 80, maybe $100 Canadian. If they go over their stipend of kits, that adds up. So, you said it, I said it. I think education is the best thing. Don't get mad at somebody for asking for a kit. But if a player says no, you hear them mutter under their breath or whatever else. It's an opportunity for us as supporters to educate more casual supporters that these guys aren't rich and they can't just give away their jerseys.
Exactly. And yeah, I think that's well put. So yeah, great question. It's a nice little debate that you started there, Andrew. And yeah, I'm sure everybody has a different opinion on it, and we just gave you ours. So Chris, thanks a mil for hanging out. We obviously miss Gary, but you more than made up for the tactical side of it, so I appreciate it. And yeah, so let's hope we get a win on Thursday, and we look forward to the game on Tuesday.
Get out! Out to box!